Blog Talk Radio.
Gentlemen, we have a big show, a real big shoe.
You believe
it, Bella? Yes! Welcome to the Penns Nation Radio Show with hosts Ken Wells, Joe Depto, Ashley Langlois, Andy Hughes, and Nick Richter. Guests can call into the show at 347-202-0344, or you can tweet us at the Penns Nation.
The Penns Nation. I'm Ken Will. We're joined here by Joe Depto. How you doing, Joe?
Pretty good, Ken. How are you tonight?
Good. Everybody's still apologizing across the National Hockey League. Carolina Hurricanes, I see, are the most recent. Still nothing from the National Hockey League themselves or the Players Association. We haven't heard much of anything from them at all, including what the schedule is going to be. But the press conference is tomorrow. Scheduled anyway for about 4 p.m. Hopefully just at least an update on what the ratification process is from the Board of Governors. And it looks like the schedule is going to be released a little bit later on in the week. In regards to that schedule, looks like it's, at least the rumor is, and has continued to be for a while now, that the first game that the Pens play will be in Philadelphia on January 19th. That's Saturday, and it'll be a home and home, apparently, with the Flyers back-to-back. And are you tired of the Flyers? Because I, you know, at this point, you know, everyone's tired of the Flyers, sure. But, you know, it seems a little excessive to be playing them back-to-back right out of the gate here.
Well, if you're tired of it, then I guess it's good to get it out of the way early, right?
Yeah, I guess. But, I mean, it just seems like, well, as we get into March or February and get the ball rolling a little bit, it might have a little bit more of appeal. But I understand what the NHL is trying to do, and they're trying to spice it up all the way across the league with rivalries, not just in Pittsburgh, but everywhere the teams are playing. But
well, one thing I think is kind of a benefit, I guess you're going to find one silver lining there, if that's your type of thinking, is that if you're Sidney Crosby, or you're a Penguins fan who wants Sidney Crosby to be as pissed off and as mentally focused as possible, playing in an arena where he's going to get booed every time he touches the puck and they're going to chant Crosby sucks every play stoppage. I mean, I think that's a pretty good way to get this guy motivated to go in a season like this, right?
Yeah, for sure. And we've been hearing a lot from not just Sidney Crosby, but the entire Penguins team, because – If any team should be more hungry, you know, for this game as the season starts, and not just if they were playing the Flyers, but anyone who comes across their path, it should be the Pittsburgh Penguins, because they still have a really bad taste in their mouth from last year's playoffs. And I'm sure, you know, the Philadelphia Flyers do as well, because they fell short of their goal, too. But the Penguins especially, first round, being upset by the Flyers like that, and seeing the orange right away out the gate should definitely be a good motivator for them. And these are two teams that don't have all that much turnover to them. They both have their coaches returning. Systems should be fairly similar. Apparently there's going to be some tweaks to Bylsma's system, which is welcoming for most Penns fans if they're paying attention. But these should be two teams that don't have all that much adjusting that needs to be done going into the season. But, you know, the flip side of that, though, is these are two extremely important games. You know, you're talking about 8 points on the line because it's a divisional opponent, and it's right out of the gate, you know. And you already have a shortened season, 48 games. There's not much room for error, and there certainly isn't when you have two against a big-time opponent like the Flyers right off the bat.
Yeah, right. You have training camp, which is already fairly short in its own right. You have a lot of substantial roster decisions to make, really, for either team, because what Pittsburgh is kind of going through with the second line left wing is sort of what Philadelphia is going to do with their bottom pairing defense. They sort of have to choose between our guys like Brandon Manning and Bordone and Gustafson, you know, which one of those guys is ready, which one of them they're going to roll with. And then, like you said, there is a lot at stake. I think if I'm Dan Bielsma, I'm just playing back video of all the different games last year. Just putting that up as bulletin board material, because Philadelphia is going to play a very similar game. And while these two starting games are not going to be playoff games, and they're probably not going to be as much redemption as Pittsburgh would like, I do think that if they can come out and win both those games, whether it's in regulation or not, I think if they come out and win both those games, not only is a fast start very beneficial in a convoluted schedule like this, but it also gives the Penguins a nice mental boost that they can pretty much hang with their biggest nemesis on the NHL's biggest stage. This game is undoubtedly going to be broadcast on NBC.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that'll go both ways. If it's the Flyers coming away from those wins or from those games with the victories, it'll apply there too. But I'm going to go out on a limb and make an early season prediction. It's going to be a split. 50-50, which is it too. I mean, you're talking about two pretty evenly matched teams in that sense. The Philadelphia Flyers are going to be without Jaromir Jagr, so that'll be one element that's taken away from it all. But that'll be interesting to watch between the Philadelphia Flyers and the Pittsburgh Penguins. I asked, kind of trying to get an idea of whether or not I was in the minority on this, and I certainly seem to be asking whether who would people like to open the season against. Green-eyed Lilo Flyers, which seems to be happening anyway. That playoff series is way too fresh in my mind. Lisa says, Flyers do it for me. It's way too much unfinished business. Scott Shoemaker says, at home against the Flyers. Doug S. wants us to open against the Wild, which isn't going to happen because they're a Western Conference team. A few people bring up the Carolina Hurricanes because they want to see the Stalls, and the Stalls playing against each other, or not against each other, but with each other against their Jordan Stahl's former team. That's the Pens Pond, and Lamar has that to say. And then one other one was Chicago Blackhawks, which again is a Western Conference team and is not going to happen over there either.
Another season that Sidney Crosby will not be playing against the Chicago Blackhawks, by the way.
Sidney Crosby, Evgeny Malkin, Patrick Kane, and Jonathan Toews have never seen the same ice together all at once, those four superstars. And they're this far in their career. It's got to happen at some point, you know. And that's, the Penguins have already had their share of Winter Classics, and Chicago has already had a Winter Classic. But, you know, if you're looking at it from a matchup point of view and getting stardom in, that would be a really nice one to watch if you just take everything apart, Chicago and Pittsburgh. Lots of good names, huge names to promote.
Sure, absolutely. I mean, if I were to answer that question, who would I want Pittsburgh to go up against? Obviously, if I am a financial investor in the NHL, if I am one of the big wigs at the NHL brass, obviously, I want Philadelphia there because there's got legitimate hate between those two teams and fan bases, and it's going to be nasty. And, you know, you don't need breakout passes and that sort of thing to be really angry at your opponent and check them into the ports and sort of get that thing going. You know, you don't need a lot of timing down, a lot of practice to be able to do that. So from an emotional standpoint, that game's going to be just as intense as the last time we saw these two teams play, which was back in mid-April. But from a fan standpoint, I really wouldn't mind seeing the team go up against a team like New York or the Rangers or the Boston Bruins or, you know, an elite team of the Eastern Conference, because there's going to be so much of timing that's going to be off. I would think as a Pittsburgh Penguins fan, you would want to get your most difficult opponent out of the way as soon as possible.
Yeah, and I honestly don't know all that much about what the Flyers have been doing through the offseason, if there's been a core group. I know a lot of teams have had the same kind of thing that the Penguins have, where they've had 10 to 12 skaters on the ice fairly regularly, skating at their home practice complexes like the Penguins have. But I know just watching some of the guys on the ice, the 12 that were at South Point yesterday, there's definitely a lot of rust on these guys, including superstars like Sidney Crosby. One person who kind of stood out for me from that group was James Neal, actually. So I wouldn't be surprised to see him jump off to a really quick start here either. But yeah, well, it's going to be interesting to watch pan out. And so Penguins and Flyers, we'll be talking about it a lot. Hopefully we'll stay away from doing anything too bad too early in the season. We get us in trouble here on the show.
Yeah. That last time, not only, you know, on the show and everything, but that last series was just such a mess. I mean, the best word I could use to describe it isn't a word I want to even use on the air. So it's, you know, it's just one of those things. Brought out so many bad things on both sides.
I was just embarrassed to lose. I was embarrassed as a Pens fan. I was embarrassed as a hockey fan, and Flyers fan should have been as well, because I mean that was not hockey. And anyone,
no, it wasn't.
You know, people have talked about, you know, the battle for Pennsylvania, how it was such a great moment. Well, last year, I didn't think so. It was bad hockey, just straight up bad hockey. You know, when everything under the sun is going in the net. Defensive breakdowns left and right. It wasn't like the Washington Capitals series from a few years ago, where Alex Ovechkin and Sidney Crosby were just putting on a show throughout that entire series. There was good goaltending on both sides. The defensive systems were sound. No, it was just two bad teams playing poorly against each other. Or I shouldn't say that. Two really good teams playing really poorly against each other.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that's probably the best way to describe it. I think it's great when you have a rivalry series like that that contains a lot of emotion, but I also think there definitely is, especially with the nature of the NHL, there's definitely such a thing as too much emotion. And I hate to harken back to another really bad night, but a lot of the games in that series reminded me of that bloodbath in Nassau Coliseum with the New York Islanders in a previous season. And it was too close to that than a regular hockey game. And it's a shame that both of those events had to involve the Pittsburgh Penguins, because there's already so many people that are convinced that there's a pro-Pittsburgh conspiracy around the NHL and all sorts of absurd things like that. So the team can sort of be in the wrong place at the wrong time as far as that sort of thing goes. With Philadelphia, really, there isn't that much difference since that game. I mean, sure, there's the Dan Briere injury. There's the Andre Mazaris injury. The only thing good about the Danny Briere injury, I mean, are they going to properly call off sides in that game? So, I mean, if he's not playing, I mean, that could be an advantage. Other than that, I mean, Luke Shen, losing James Van Riemsdyk for Luke Shen, I mean, I think that was a pretty solid trade for Philadelphia.
Yeah, it was.
But time will tell.
Yes, and we're welcoming Andy Hughes into the show a little bit late. We can't really argue too much because Joe and I were late ourselves.
Certainly all right. Yeah, I was just got back from Pierce Township hockey game.
I'm mowing the lawn.
So plenty of hockey talk here tonight. I'm cool with that.
Cool. I wrote down what looks like Gonchar Depto's wife.
What?
I can't read my own handwriting, but it looks like I wrote Depto's wife next to Gonchar. So how is
that's ironic, because I'm not married. All right.
Oh, you sure? I mean, it sounds like there's something either I don't know about or you don't know about, or maybe Nick is the only one who knows about this.
Yeah, I'm on my own, my friend. So.
anyway, we're talking about the article that you wrote for the Pens Nation today, making the case against Sergei Gonchar and bringing here, what you say to the Penguins and Penguins fans that you should just take the pass on Sergei Gonchar. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. I haven't really, since I wrote that and since I posted it, I mean, I've been on Twitter and everything, but I haven't really been talking a lot to Penguins fans or to you guys about it, so I don't know what the reaction has been to it. I know that the people I sent it to on Facebook, it was widely negative. People were very angry at me for taking an anti-Gonchar stance, but That's all right. The truth is sometimes hard to swallow.
Mm-hmm. Oh, crap. Not to go back to the topic we were just talking about, but now I am immediately getting chirped now by Flyers fans. It's already started.
She's not even started yet.
I love it. I love it.
Good God.
Pretty soon they'll be calling into the show like they did before.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. I have no beef with Flyers fans.
No, that they're, you know, I respect the fact that they at least know the game and know what you're talking about. They might be, you know, ignorant and unintelligent. No, not ignorant, but unintelligent. So it's a fine line. And they're really not. I'm just stirring the pot. See, this is what it does to me. This is why I don't like the Flyers. I'd rather play the Islanders 48 times. That's not true either. So Sergei Gonchar.
Ken is already jammed up.
Still got
11 days. You got 11 days until this thing kicks off. So, I mean, base yourself.
Well, this whole thing, like, I titled this show Hockey Purgatory because it just feels right now like we don't even have a training camp yet. We just barely have a training camp date opening up. It looks like it's going to be Sunday. And we don't have a schedule. We just have a phantom collective bargaining agreement that hasn't even been ratified by either side yet. And really, it looks like it hasn't even been officially written by either side exactly yet. So this is all just, you know, completely new to where, you know, we don't have a lockout to talk about. We don't have negotiation sessions to talk about. We don't have Dreger face to talk about. But we have, you know, everything else under the sun to talk about. Just seems like nothing's happening in these informal playing sessions. Man, I'm already complaining, even though this is way freaking better than the lockout.
Yes, it is. A lot better.
Yeah, man, we have no zero right to complain right now. I understand.
I'm going to anyway.
Well, I mean, I understand you're jammed up and everything like that, and it's been some time. We've already missed way too much hockey this season, but the fact that we are guaranteed to have it and have good hockey in less than 2 weeks, I think that is some reason for celebration. And don't forget, I mean, as a Penguin-centric show, I mean, we have plenty to talk about. There's a lot of rumors going on. There's discussion about the left wing spot. There's discussion about the defense. Every single day that we get closer to camp, there's going to be more talks. Dan Bylsma has made some stuff. I mean, there's going to be plenty. And then you've got the Atlantic Division, which is going to be extremely tight from the second through fourth spot. The rest of the Atlantic, I mean, Eastern Conference is going to be really interesting because in a shortened season like this, I mean, even if you're a team like Montreal, if you get off to a 10-2 start, you know, and all teams go through hot streaks and cold streaks throughout the season. That's the nature of hockey. It's just the way it is. If some team that's just gets off to a random hot start, even if they go .500 the rest of the way, it's still going to be very difficult for that team to completely miss the playoffs altogether. So those first couple weeks are going to be just like the playoffs. And then you've got a trade deadline that's just a few days away from the start of the playoffs. To me, it's going to be absolute bananas. So I'm enjoying the calm before the storm.
Yeah, and the storm's going to hit right away because you bring up the trade deadline. Something I was thinking about is when do rosters open up here? Because right now, like if Ray Shiro has somebody who he wants to sign and even has a deal worked out with, he could be sitting next to him right now and he could not sign a contract because there's no collective bargaining agreement that's been ratified. When does that officially open up? Does it have to wait until the players ratify it after, I think that's happening on Saturday night? Do both sides have to have it done before any kind of roster moves can happen? Or once it's ratified on one side, is it the floodgates open then? And even then, is it going to be, okay, we have a deal that's signed by both sides, now go for it? Or is it going to be, okay, Sunday at noon? That's when the floodgates open up, because that's going to be basically the trade deadline, free agent day, and anything else that you can think of all rolled up into one ball of nonsense. There's a lot of free agents who are still on the market.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's a lot of potential trades that could go down. I mean,
Roberto Luongo is practically a Maple Leaf already.
Right, absolutely. I mean, it just seems like that's an inevitable thing to happen. I mean, I don't know if that's the case. Bob McKenzie says it's not. I mean, Pittsburgh, I mean, think about it. Ray Shiro, he has to know that Robert Bortuzzo, Brian Street, Ben Lovejoy, Derek Englund, if he doesn't want any of these guys to be one of seven defensemen, he's got to place them on waivers. And those guys aren't great, but they're probably good enough to where someone out there is going to claim them for depth. If you know that you've got guys that are going to get claimed on the market, you're at least going to try to make a move. I mean, I have to think they've got this cap space, and they completely blew it this offseason with it. Just like in terms of free agency, the way they've blown it in the last few years. I mean, I have to think to myself that if he's saying to himself, okay, we have almost $10 million in cap space, the bottom four of our defense is a total train wreck, and we have absolutely no one to play that top six spot. And if we get somebody and get somebody solid, our team has a legitimate shot to win a Stanley Cup right now. I have to think that a team like Pittsburgh is at least going to make a few phone calls once we get this thing started to bring in.
A few restricted free agents too. PK Subban. You know, but the thing is, you can't offer sheet these guys anymore.
No. Yeah, they'll probably re-sign as soon as they can, most likely.
Yeah. I mean, that's typically how it works anyway. But
yeah.
There's not going to be that element of things.
So,
so if we're looking at the Penguins' defense and saying, okay, there's lots of free agents, possible trades out there, looking outside of the Penguins organization, if you're not going to bring in a guy like Sergei Gonchar, we're not going to bring in Sergei Gonchar, who is on the market or out there on the National Hockey League being a free agent or through trade, who might fill that role or gap?
Well, I think it depends on which teams kind of consider themselves buyers and sellers early on. I mean, a team like Phoenix, for example, I think is a possibility because they not only do they have the lowest payroll in the NHL, and you don't in the way the cap floor works this year, you don't get to that point unless you're doing it almost intentionally. The other side of that is a Phoenix team, you know, like they always seem to be under Dave Tippett, they're extremely underrated. They're capable of doing serious things in the Western Conference. So would they want to trade a guy like Keith Yandel right now? I don't think so. I mean, if Pittsburgh was able to move Paul Martin's salary in any capacity, I'm sure that they would at least consider it rather than having to use one of their buyouts in the offseason and having that guy on their roster, which, I mean, he could have a bounce back season. The guy's a very talented player, but it just seems like his head is not connected to his body when it comes to playing in a Pittsburgh Penguins uniform. And usually when that happens, moving out of town and a change of scenery is sometimes the best thing that you can do for the guy.
I have a prediction. I mean, Paul Martin is certainly going to be better in a Penguins uniform this year, partly because, you know, I think he is way more upset with his play last year than any Penguins fan is in Pittsburgh. You know, there's not a question about that. So he's been taking this offseason to work on some of those weaknesses, to take a look at, you know, some tape and some film. He's been given some feedback by other guys and other coaches. And the other part is, you know, the coaching staff does acknowledge that. So there's been a lot of extra work this offseason that's gone into looking at what will make Paul Martin successful. And I think that, you know, in turn, we're going to see a much different Martin this season than we did last season. I mean, think about Gonchar's first year here in Pittsburgh. He was not a popular guy, you know. And now we're talking 3 years after the fact of him leaving. You know, everybody wants to bring him back because, you know, he's a revered figure. And, you know, we want to have a parade for him right down Forbes Avenue.
Speak for yourself, buddy.
Yeah, I'm speaking for the masses. But the reality is Paul Martin is going to be better this year. And I don't think he's going to have a problem fitting in that top four. And, you know, Paul Martin might be someone who you can move. And if you can get a package – with Paul Martin for a guy like Keith Yandel in Phoenix. I mean, now, like Martin for Yandel, we're talking that's a pipe dream. Really, Keith Yandel in general is pretty much a pipe dream. But
it is.
But that, you know, obviously that's something you look at. But, you know, get used to Paul Martin because he's going to be around at least for this year. And then if he does leave before the end of his contract, it's probably going to be a buyout situation.
Well, one thing I would add about Paul Martin in his current play on the team, is that he actually, because of this new CBA, he actually has a considerable amount of pressure on him.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas last year, he was guaranteed a roster spot for three more seasons on an NHL team somewhere, and most likely Pittsburgh, because the way he played last year, his trade value is at an all-time low. If he doesn't have a very strong season in Pittsburgh this year, he can be bought out. These salaries are guaranteed, but there's an asterisk next to that because of the buyout and the amnesty clauses and any sort of thing like that. If you have a player on a bad contract, and this goes for a lot of different players, say Philadelphia, they have they just really struggle with Ilya Bryzgalov, and they think to themselves, man, this, you know what, we gave this guy this huge deal, it's just not working out, let's go elsewhere with this. They can buy him out. That applies to Paul Martin. If he struggles this year, he's gone. I don't think there's any question about that.
Mm-hmm. And you're right. That definitely does. It basically is. It's a contract year for Paul Martin. And that's a very, very healthy motivator and something we worry about with Matt Niskanen, since he got his contract and he kind of got paid. Chris Letang has a contract that's coming up, so that might be a motivator for him. So there's a lot of guys on this blue line who either have that extra motivation or, you know, Niskanen, who is a bit of a career enigmatic career. He's a question mark in that regard. But we'll talk we'll kind of break down those defensemen a little bit more. I'm going to be having a piece coming up on Pens Nation tomorrow on Wednesday, and it'll kind of tackle that, which is a lot harder than the forwards, mm-hmm. because there's a lot more options, a lot more question marks, and it's a bigger problem on the Penguins roster. That's not as big of a problem as what some people seem to think it is. It could be potentially a cup inhibiting problem with the defense, but it's not like the Penguins are going to be finishing 25th in the National Hockey League because of their blue line at this point, or missing the playoffs for that matter. Now, speaking of contracts, long contracts and buyouts, one guy with a long contract is supposedly going to be electing to stay in the KHL because, and we've heard a couple of people talking about this, but this is the player that makes this all big and high profile. Word about escrow, and that is Ilya Kovalchuk. The KHL had said that they would make all players honor their NHL contracts. Now, they're backpedaling on that a little bit. We're having a little bit of the same kind of Vladimir Velichkin versus Evgeny Malkin, Malkin's parents, his agent, and Helsinki airports, and defecting to Finland, and then all of a sudden getting all the way over to Los Angeles, resurfacing a week later. Is that going to happen with all these KHL guys, or is there some kind of piece that makes a lot more sense than a James Bond movie?
A Kovalchuk contract saga. This sounds familiar.
He'll be back. He'll be back in New Jersey. He'll be back soon. In the whole situation.
Can they at least make it exciting, though?
Yeah, they should.
Well, I think they're doing their best already. I mean, and for those of you listening live, we're going to lose you in a minute, but go to thepensnation.com, download the podcast, and hear 15 minutes of us yammer on about Ilya Kovalchuk. Anyway, the thing is with Kovalchuk is that it's fine. It's totally fine. Like many things in this lockout, the guy does have legitimate reasons for what he's doing. And the media is drumming this up. And I'm sorry, I don't mean to touch on a touchy subject here, but if Ilya Kovalchuk were any nationality but Russian, this would be a total non-factor. The prejudice that the hockey media has against Russian players is absolutely absurd and ridiculous. And this story here just proves it. I mean, I even saw people talking today, should I be worried about if Malkin's going to come over? I mean, this is absolutely absurd. Get real. Get real about this. It's absurd.
Now, you're right. There certainly is a prejudice, but the Russian governing bodies of the league don't exactly help things with some of the things that they have said. We'll see you on the podcast. Joe Depto is a commie now.
Hey, man, I got that Eastern European blood in me. It goes a long way.
Yeah, man. You wearing red boxer shorts?
Well, that's got classified information.
I hear that.
I told you I'd have to kill you.
I hear that's what Contreras' wife likes.
Yikes.
Well, now you know what that marriage problem earlier in the show was. wasn't supposed to come up. Now you know why I'm against Sergei Gonchar coming to Pittsburgh.
Oh, man. Jeffy wants all the borscht for himself.
No pun intended.
One other name from that era that's also been talked about, Sergei Gonchar returning to Pittsburgh. We've already hashed on that. I'm glad we're on the podcast because I don't want to waste this topic live or waste live time with this topic. Name that's been brought up is Peter Sikora, who is an unrestricted free agent. He is a winger who at one time filled a top six role on the Pittsburgh Penguins. Do you think there's any chance that he still has it in him to get on that line with Evgeny Malkin and make a difference?
Do I think he's going to come here? No. But do I think that they should consider it? Yeah, I think that there's some real potential there. I mean, it's what is the guy going to cost at this point in his career? I mean, probably not even $1 million, right?
I'm not sure. Actually, I don't know what he made last year. But what he makes this year certainly won't be as much as he makes last year.
Yeah,
it's like the Mike Comrie thing. It's a win-win no matter what happens.
But he didn't have a bad season last year. He put up some decent numbers.
Yeah.
I'm not sure he's exactly what the Penguins need in a lot of ways, but, you know.
Him and Bylsma did not get along at all, by the way, last year he was here.
I don't think he's washed up like some seem to consider as well either. Yeah, you know, he played all 82 games last season, 21 goals, 23 assists. Those aren't bad numbers at all.
He made $650,000, not made barely over the minimum.
Mm-hmm.
I saw Kovalev's trying out with the Panthers.
Yeah, that wouldn't be a good idea.
I'm not promoting that at all.
Forget it. I was looking at some picture of Kovalev when that came up. They used a picture of his last stint with the Penguins as the picture that went along with the article. It's like, man, you look so freaking old. And that was, you know, 2 years ago at this point. He's 40 years old. He did not look that great in his last stint here in Pittsburgh. He still has the release. He still has some of those skills. But, you know, he is not the same kind of a speed, not the same guy who took the marathon shift with Mike Keenan back in 94 with the New York Rangers.
Sometimes I got to wonder if these guys just don't know how to manage their money. And they're just looking for a paycheck.
Yeah, you're right. It's true. I kind of wondered that about Chris Letang. Like, what kind of financial problems did he get into? Did he have a signing bonus that, you know, allowed him to make a car payment? And that's why he signed that contract over in the KHL, knowing full well that, you know, a CBA may be, days away and ended up being, you know, exactly that whenever he finally got over there to St. Petersburg.
Based on Fleury's reaction to that question, it seems like he's going to get made fun of a lot by his teammates for that.
Good.
As he should.
I feel like the more those guys have on each other, the better the team plays.
Yeah, absolutely.
it's just that kind of dynamic, the way things work. Speaking of Europe, did everybody check out the Deutsche Eisline League?
Huh?
I mean, you know, I have terrible German dialect or pronunciation skills or anything like that. I could barely say Sven Butenschan, but the DEL is the abbreviation that everybody knows the league by. It's one of the elite leagues in Europe. They had their winter game, their version of the Winter Classic, last weekend, and the light show from it was pretty impressive. And then I went to click on some of the related videos to that, and it was like German fans singing along with Neil Diamond, and it was some German guy with an acoustic guitar singing in English, singing exactly like Neil Diamond. But then it gets to the chorus, you have "Sweet Caroline, ho ho ho." It was like, why is the translation from English to German "ba ba ba" to "ho ho ho"?
Dude, this is around the holidays, man. Santa Claus.
Uh-huh. I felt like it was at Hop Brew House or something.
Ooh.
We can find a way. I want to go to Hop Brew House.
That sounds really good.
Yeah, I'd be up for that. If we could do that, I mean, we're only going to be on the air for about 10 more minutes here, so we got to hurry up.
We got to make that happen. Depto's all the way out in Columbus. That's going to be kind of a long drive.
That's
I'd say that that's something that Columbus needs, the Opera House, but Columbus does have Schmitz.
Yeah, not only do they have Schmitz, but they've also got plenty of other that sort of thing. And plus, if we wanted to hit up a bar in the middle of a hockey show, I mean, the R Bar is just 10 minutes from my house. So, I mean, which is fantastic. I openly endorse that place, by the way. So.
Yeah, true.
That's right. We had the owner on the show.
We've openly endorsed the R Bar several times in this show, including having Mike Darr on the show. But Depto and I definitely have to have a Depto date. I've done this show from the R Bar several times, actually.
That's true. I mean, we both live in Ohio, so it makes sense.
Looks like the Columbus Blue Jackets are going to announce their captain on Wednesday. My odds and favorite for that is RJ Umberger.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I would say that or Vinny Prospel.
Yeah, and I think Vinny Prospel would be a lot more likely if he weren't such a new face to Columbus.
There's a lot of new faces in Columbus, though. I mean,
there are.
Who else is going to get it? I mean, Derek Brassard, Jared Bull. Derek Dorsett, I think, is kind of the dark horse in that race.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they have a lot of new faces on that team.
They're going to be a lot better than people think, too, this year. I can say right now, that's going to be my surprise team, and it's not because I cover them and live here. They're a very respectable lineup top to bottom. I think Sergei Bobrovsky is going to have a fantastic season.
Well, that's the whole thing. That's, you know, whether the Blue Jackets succeed or fail, or, you know, if they find themselves, I think the worst thing they could do is finish somewhere between 22 and 25, or, you know, 20 and 25 for that matter, and be on the lesser end of the draft lottery. Looking at that again, but I think, I mean, everything hinges on how well will sort of Bobrovsky play this season. Will he continue to be the head case that he has been in his past? And unfortunately, he doesn't have much of any kind of stable mentor there in Columbus. But between him and Steve Mason, it's not exactly the models of stability. But I think Bobrovsky is going to be the guy pretty much all this season in Columbus, just let his Depto's head.
Well, I mean, I don't think there needs to be one. I mean, there's been plenty of great goalies around the league who were kind of thrown into the fire right away and were fine. I mean, I think you can make an argument for it, but the defense is if you can name me 10 better defenses in the NHL than Columbus, I would have to strongly disagree with you. The defense is fantastic. Anisimov's a great player. Dubinsky's a great player. I mean, sure, do they have a definitive primary puck scorer the way they did with Rick Nash? No, but they also have a lot more depth that they didn't have before.
Mm-hmm.
Nick Foligno is such an underrated acquisition of this team. I mean, I'm sorry, I don't know what Ottawa is thinking, trading Nick Foligno for a player like Mark Messier. He's not bad, but it just seems like such a lopsided trade. When your top six is Umberger, Dubinsky, Brassard, Foligno, Johansson, a former fourth overall pick. I mean, Cam Atkinson, who has 10 points in his last six games last year. If he gets off to a hot start, he could be a dynamic player. Colton Gillies showed you a lot. Derek McKenzie is a good bottom six player. I just think there's a lot of cohesion there. Sure, they don't have a big-time singular name that they can rest their laurels on, but as a unit, it works really, really well. The Nashville Predators have been making a living off of that for a long time now, and if Bobrovsky plays even in the ballpark of what Pekka Rene does, and I don't think it's really unrealistic to think that, if he does that, Columbus could be an 8 or 9 seed in the West.
Oh, yeah. I think saying Bobrovsky's going to be Pekka Rene is a little bit of a jump. But
I said the ballpark.
In the same ballpark. One person is on home plate, the other person is in peanut heaven, but they will be in that ballpark
somewhere.
Well, and Steve Mason has got a lot of pressure on him. I mean, with the outlandish verbal disagreements he's had with his coach, the immaturity he showed both on and off the ice consistently since he's been here, if he really comes out, whether he's in a definite backup role or whether it's a 1A, 1B thing with Bobrovsky, if he really, really struggles, he's probably not really going to have another shot to play in the NHL. His career ceiling is probably, you know, an Andrew Raycroft type of career. So if he ever wants to make it more than that, then he has a lot of pressure on himself. So Columbus' goalie situation, they don't have a mentor, but they do have a hell of a lot of competition, which I think would bring out the best in goalies.
Yeah, man. And you know, a couple of other things that the Blue Jackets do have going for them is the fact that they're surrounding themselves with winners a little bit more now. And their biggest thing lacking, aside from talent, and even more than talent, is just that culture. And they're starting to get it in Columbus. Craig Patrick is a proven winner. John Davidson, which, by the way, Steve Mason, he can cry to his coach all that he wants. But then when he looks at John Davidson, you know, former goaltender, he's been around the game forever and he's a legend, you know, he's going to shut up. He's going to be put in his place right away. So Steve Mason has a lot more of that, another personality that's just totally grounding in all of that. I think, you know, Rick Nash is a great player. He wasn't a captain. He wasn't someone to build a team around. And he was given a situation that was a little overwhelming for him or for anybody, you know, in that position. And I think he'll flourish not having that on him anymore in New York. And the Blue Jackets themselves will be able to come together and form a real identity around this new lineup. So it's going to be interesting to see what the Blue Jackets do with this. And hopefully the people of Columbus can, A, forgive the lockout, B, forgive the Blue Jackets, C, forgive the Blue Jackets, and D, forgive the Blue Jackets for everything that's happened in the past decade. And what's that?
John Davidson, man. He's going to bring relevant hockey to Columbus. I'm telling you. Columbus, in the East, I've got the New York Islanders and the Montreal Canadiens. Those are my surprise teams. In the West, well, the Tampa Bay Lightning, too, but I don't think that's really a surprise. In the West, Columbus Blue Jackets, mark it down. They'll be like Minnesota was last year, where they're not they're not necessarily a playoff team, or like the Calgary Flames were last year. Not necessarily a playoff team, but they were so close that you could never take a night off against them.
And I'll say, if the Blue Jackets or anybody in the National Hockey League get off at a start that the Minnesota Wild did last season, they could very well sneak into the playoffs, even if they do start to buckle toward the end of the year, because the Minnesota Wild in a 48-game season, they may very well have been on I don't have the numbers in front of me, but they could have been, you know, in that top eight seed in the Western Conference.
Absolutely. I mean, the start that they got off to last year, people were talking about, you know, Coach of the Year honors. People were talking about MVP honors. People were talking about Nick Backstrom as a Vezina. I mean, there was a lot of stuff going on there, and it's amazing that everyone made such a big deal about Zach Parise and Ryan Suter signing there in the summer, but we have not talked about that at all. And when I say we, I don't mean us. I mean just hockey fans in general. Mm-hmm. It really has not been discussed that much. The Rangers are getting pubbed. The Pittsburgh Penguins are getting pubbed. The Flyers are, you know, the big names, the Blackhawks, the Canucks, the defending champs, the Kings, are all getting a lot of talk thrown their way. But Minnesota, and I know that sounds cliche because they were part of such a, you know, all the big moves. They can easily buy out Healy at the end of the year. And if he doesn't work out, they can healthy scratch him. They've got Pierre-Marc Bouchard is due for a breakout year, and they've got an absolute elite goalie in Nick Backstrom there. And the defense really isn't that bad with Ryan Suter. They just needed one extra piece. Same thing with the forwards up front. They needed just one extra piece. Suter and Parise both fit that. I don't think Minnesota is going to be a cup contender in the West, but I'd be surprised if they're not a playoff team.
If the Pittsburgh Penguins had signed even just Zach Parise, and leaving Suter out of this entirely, the cap situation for the next few years would not be pretty at all.
No, especially when you got to sign Malkin and Letang.
Mm-hmm.
That would make things a lot harder.
No, you better hope those kids are ready, the Harringtons and the Morrows and guys like that don't require a lot of cap room. You better hope they're ready to go.
And